Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, we have the Bizarro episode, where I asked the patrons of the podcast what they would like to have happen on the upcoming episodes, and one of the suggestions was having me be the person who's being interviewed, so I have again asked my good friend Sung Soo to join me on the interwebs and have a conversation with me and ask me some questions and stuff like that. So, hello, Sung Soo. How are you doing?
I'm great, Jay. Thanks. Welcome. Thanks for having me back. Super happy to be here. We talk a lot. It's great to talk on the microphone.
Yeah, it's we don't talk verbally very much, but we do chat a lot.
No, we're not monsters. We don't call each other on the phone. Let's be real.
Yeah, we're civilized human beings that text each other.
Yeah, I think either one of us would have an anxiety attack if we called each other.
It would be like if I picked up my phone and saw the caller ID with you as the person calling, like I would answer it right away because I'd be like, oh my god, somebody is dying and I need to find out what I can do to help.
That is basically the same response I would have, and given the current political and global climate.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh no, what has happened? I need to start driving to Idaho. But yeah, every once in a while, you still meet someone that like really wants to chat. And I'm like, what? Like, okay, I guess. Actually, no, I'm not okay. But you're right. We do talk a lot, just not in audible form, which is ironic since we both make a lot of podcasts.
It's true. So why don't you go ahead and give a little bit of a background of yourself and also pimp out some of the things that you're doing right now.
Yeah, I'll always sell myself for money. It's a trait that I love about myself. But yeah, my name's Sung Soo. Like all of you, I've been gaming for a long time. I met Jay actually through podcasting and Competitive War Machine. And then lately, I've really been focusing on Marvel Crisis Protocol, which has been a ton of fun. Jay runs Recalibration Matrix, which is a great podcast. And then Pat Dunford and I run Across the Bifrost, which you can find on patreon.com/AcrossTheBifrost if you want to stay up to date on that. And then lately, I've actually found a lot of
real quick, before you move on, I'm going to do an extra little plug for Across the Bifrost. If you guys have any interest in Crisis Protocol, check out their podcast. It's very good. Sung Soo makes a great host. And Pat is, I think that Pat has one of the most interesting minds of anyone that I know. And he's very smart, very insightful, and he'll say things about gaming that you're like, oh, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but it totally makes sense, and you're totally right. So you guys have great chemistry and work really well together.
No, yeah, thank you so much. And yeah, Pat is interesting in a good way, right? We meet a lot of interesting people in gaming circles. Pat's interesting in a good way.
Pat is, as Hungerford likes to say about Tony at Privateer Press, he says he's the best of us, and that's also true about Pat. So he's
the best of us. Absolutely. Playing Crisis Protocol again. Thanks for the plug, Jay. But yeah, Across the Bifrost for that. And then lately, I've found a lot of tranquility in painting Warhammer 40K, which is interesting. I know you were a little surprised when I placed my 40K order from Discount Games Incorporated, but it's just, it's very relaxing. The models are easy to paint. It's rewarding. Kind of check something off and move on. So that's what I've been doing lately. Haven't been playing a lot of games because of everything that's going on. But I think that's a little bit about what we're going to talk about here in the first episode of The Meta.
Yeah, I've missed playing games. and part of what makes it difficult is that like I'm a little bit envious of my friends who that video gaming can scratch that itch, and there are some games that I have loved that have been computer games. Usually it's more turn-based strategy games like Heroes of Might and Magic, or some role-playing games can also fall in that category. But in general, one of the things that like I've come to learn and accept about myself is that usually I love the idea of a video game more than the video game itself. And usually, like, I don't hate video games. It's usually more along the lines of, like, I'd rather read or do something else. And so this whole quarantine thing, I'm definitely not getting I'm not getting my gaming in like I need. So that's kind of a problem.
Yeah, so I think if you don't mind, let's start talking about that. Let's talk about kind of our individual experiences in quarantine, because it's a little different. Obviously, I have a whole bunch of kids. You have a whole bunch of cats. And the disparity there, there's obviously some differences between Idaho and Colorado, geographically, politically, and infection-wise. And yeah, I think the first thing is, yeah, we're all missing something, right? We're all dealing with a lot of tension in our lives. And a lot of the things we use for stress relief, whether that's going to the gym or going out, for those weird extroverts in the world and like talking to people and things, we're missing a lot of things. And one of the things that Meg, my incredible wife, at the beginning, I told her, I'm like, I'm going to be fine. I identify as an introvert. I kind of recharge myself alone. She says, you're going to miss gaming. She says, you're going to miss going out and competing. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to be fine. And like day two, I'm like scratching my neck and wondering what's going on. And meanwhile, she's fine, just laying in the bed reading. So, yeah, I was surprised at how much I missed going to my local game store. I was surprised at how much I missed my, you know, Tuesday comes around, and that's usually the day where I go out and game. And I was surprised how much I missed that. You know, whether it's playing a board game or playing Crisis Protocol or playing 40K or anything, I was really surprised again, like how much I missed that. So,
are you able to? I know that you've dabbled a little bit in Magic, and there's a few online options with Magic. Does that scratch the itch for you at all?
Yeah, actually, when I stepped away from competitive War Machine, I actually really threw myself into Magic: The Gathering again. I won a PTQ. Way back in like 1999, which is a long time ago, and I really enjoyed competitive Magic for like the last maybe 9 months or so, and I kind of soured on it. So I've considered going back to it. One of the problems with online Magic, I don't know how much you know about this, is basically two platforms. We have Arena, which is like new Magic, mm-hmm. Standard Magic, which I don't like. It's unplayable trash. And then we have the older formats, Pioneer right now, which is the newer format, Modern, Legacy, and Vintage. I really like Modern. So there's a cost barrier. Like, decks are expensive. I use Mana Traders, which was like a rental service, but it was costing like $100 a month just to rent cards. Mm. And then you played in tournaments. So I did get good enough where I basically – all my tournament entry fees were covered, but I'm kind of rambly. But one of my fears with Magic is I'm – We're all kind of that obsessive personality, right? When you play really competitively War Machine, you know, you throw yourself into it. And, you know, I was the same way. And with Magic it always being there, it was really easy for me to lose myself in it. So especially with working from home and needing to balance chores and staying active, engaging with my children, making sure that at the end of the epidemic I'm still married, I decided not to play Magic again. I was afraid I would go a little too hard into it. And then I've been a little disenchanted with Magic for like different WotC reasons in the last like 3 or 6 months. But that's a long conversation.
So I'll do my little Magic sidebar here real quick. So I was just a little kid in, it might have been middle school, maybe high school, probably high school. And my brother is about 9, 10 years older than me. And he came home one day and was like, there's this cool new game. You need to try it with me. And so it was Magic: The Gathering. And at that time, the sets that you could purchase to open were Unlimited and Arabian Nights. So I'm really old. And I played Magic a long time ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, this game's amazing. And so, like, I was working a part-time job, and I plowed most of my paycheck into, buying boxes of Magic. And, to be, like, a game store owner at that time, because, like, the internet didn't exist, and game store owners couldn't keep Magic in stock, and they're selling it for full retail, and just making, like, money hand over fist. And...
I mean, it was the Keyforge of
1990. That's true, yeah. And it's fun.
That's the second we're going to talk about.
Okay, yeah, no. And it's kind of funny to look back at it because, like, you know, I would open up Moxes and Lotuses, and I had a playset of four of all of the dual lands. But like when I first started playing, we would play for Ante, because that was one of the rules, and there wasn't the rule where you had to have play with a max of four of each card, right? And so I had a friend who he would come and play everyone, and he's a really smart guy. And he had a deck that had three cards in it. It had Islands, Flying Men, and Unstable Mutations. And so he would Ante up, and all his cards were common. And, you know, if I play him, oh, look, there's my dual land, or, you know, my Shivan Dragon, which at the time I thought, oh my God, this Shivan Dragon is this amazing card. And the Flying Man, or a 1/1 flyer for one blue, an Unstable Mutation, you put 3+1/+1 counters on the creature, and then it gets -1/-1 for every round. And so he could turn one, drop a Flying Man, turn two, put two Unstable Mutations on you, and attack for seven. And it rarely lost, but when he did, he just lost a common, and so he didn't care. And so I kept playing Magic. I started going to some of the, you know, regional events, stuff like that. And the two things that ended up bothering me were, the first one was that, and this could potentially, the first one could potentially be that I just never got good enough at the game to be able to mitigate this. But one of the, like in War Machine, I rarely went on dice tilt. It didn't really bother me that much, but it felt like in Magic, you either got mana starved or mana flooded, like way too often. And it just drove me crazy. And so that ended up eventually being a big, because as someone who was obsessive and someone who wanted to, you know, play competitively, it felt like it was just this aspect of the game that was out of my control, and that made it feel like there was too much randomness in the game. Then the other thing that I eventually came to realize was that I loved Magic much more than Magic loved me, and much more than Wizards of the Coast loved me. And so, and that kind of gets to what you said a little bit about how, like, some of the things that Wizards do, you hear just like, sometimes it feels like, and it feels this way because they do view you this way, that Wizards of the Coast, Hasbro, you know, whatever, basically they view their customers as like these walking ATM machines that are just spewing out $20 bills at them. And so,
that's cheap. Okay.
Yeah. So
I love some aspects of competitive Magic, and I realize we're quite a bit into this podcast. We've alienated most of the listening base by now, but I'm sure they've at least played Magic. I love the amount of data that Magic gets back. I think that's really cool.
Right,
the amount of games, the amount of data, they have full deck lists. I think that's really cool. Like, if you're really going to make data-driven decisions, absolutely. I resonate with what you said about not having all the tools at your disposal. The analogy I would make when I was talking to people about Magic who knew I was like a tryhard and War Machine is like, use all of my units, right? I always have access to my Mechanic Thralls, my Bile Thralls, my Bane Knights. I don't have to draw into them, if that makes sense. So you end up having to be happy on the line that you took. Oh, my out was playing for this card, and I didn't get to draw that card. And the other thing is, like, the win-loss ratio in Magic, even, like, super competitive pros, we're talking, like, a 55 to 65% win rate for, like, the best, right? Which means, like, you still lose a lot of games. Like, they lose one out of every three games. So yeah, there is a lot of randomness. I mean, the best 2 out of 3 is great. I'd love War Machine to be that, but I realize that is impossible from a time logistical standpoint. Adepticon, where we should be, would be taking a month to play out their tournament.
Yeah,
Magic is really expensive. Like, War Machine is not a cheap hobby, and Magic is. Yeah.
Right. Real quick, one of the things that is also, in my opinion, kind of an issue with Magic is that it really, when it was created, it was such an innovative game, But the reality is that it would be interesting to see, like, if Richard Garfield could go back and make magic today, you know, what his design decisions would be. And I think there would be some significant changes, but the reality is that magic is such a, there's so many people who are invested in magic, in the success of magic, you know, whether it is game store owners who stay afloat because of magic, or magic players who view their magic cards as an investment, that it makes it really, really difficult for any of the other games that frankly have better core rules or better, you know, gameplay or whatever, to actually get a foothold and stay in. And, you know, there's a reason why, everyone talks about, oh, this is the next new Magic, and it's a flash in the pan, and the thing that sticks around is Magic.
Well, yeah, so a couple different points on that. Sidebar is, like, my Magic the Gathering collection has held its value better than my stock portfolio in the last 3 days. So, you know, investing in Magic cards might be the way to go. Don't actually do that. Please don't actually do that. And so if one of you goes and liquidates your Roth IRA and puts it into dual lands, I'm going to feel real bad. Don't do that.
I will say that, like, at Gameopolis, we basically put a freeze on buying Magic cards once, just recently, because the prices were fluctuating so much with what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, in my opinion, we should be. Yeah, I think we'll talk about that a little bit later with Gameopolis and how it's doing. But yeah, A, I value liquidity right now more than other things. Sure. B, you hear all sorts of varying things about how long the virus can actually stay active or viable on a piece of cardboard. And like you said, it's a very volatile market. It's a non-backed market. You're basically buying cryptocurrency. Like, I've made money off cryptocurrency, but I've also lost money on cryptocurrency. And again, I value liquidity right now. That's not where I personally want to be sticking my money.
Right.
As far as Richard Garfield remaking the game and making it better, I'm going to tell you a story, Jay. Way back in 2018, a friend of mine messaged me about this cool new video game and told me I should buy in. So I buy into this video game. You were this friend, and this video game was named Artifact, which was designed by one Richard Garfield. So I'm not totally sold that old Mr. Garfield would, like, totally innovate the Magic the Gathering game and make it amazing if he got to, like, redo that.
Was Artifact a bad game?
Yes. Yes, it was, Jay.
Oh, I don't think it was, but, you know.
You led this pod off by saying about how you don't play video games and you'd rather read books.
Well, I don't consider Artifact to be a video game per se.
Oh, really? It's a card game, just in video form, or in video games?
Yeah.
The same way that you would look at Hearthstone.
Yeah.
So here's what I'll say: is like, yeah, the most. So then, if we're gonna look at it that way, right, the most competitive things to come out from Magic, off the top of my, again, I don't have any numbers behind me on this, so some nerd will correct me on Twitter, and that's great. At Sung Su, go ahead, tell me I'm wrong. It's Hearthstone, obviously has had a great hold.
Right.
Hearthstone has a fantastic free to play method. Hearthstone, also has a quicker game, and then there's some value to the intellectual property being associated with Blizzard items, right? And then I think the other game I think is Pokemon still. I could be wrong, but competitive Pokemon is still, like, a big thing.
Yeah.
And obviously, again, attached to an extremely great intellectual property, right? I have Pokemon tattoos, you know this. So yeah, I mean, breaking into the card game world's hard. And then we can say the same thing about the tabletop world, though, right? How long can we believe that Age of Sigmar made it through the last edition of rules they put out? Like, 40K is still wildly popular despite 7th edition. There's all sorts of interesting faux pas. Games Workshop has, like, tried to kill their company so many different times in so many different ways. And it's still super viable, right? It's still the most played tabletop game out there. And there are just these kind of juggernauts, these things that have existed, and they're not, you know, iterating or adapting or looking at the things that newer games do, like a lot of the core mechanics of Crisis Protocol's taken over, and, you know, some of the things I saw in kind of Neo Mechanica, or even, like, remember when War Machine was the new kid on the block, and, like, oh, bell curve, that's really cool. But these old kind of legacy games, I mean, baseball is still a sport, right? Like, these things exist for reasons I don't really understand, but it's really just because they were there first, right? They've occupied that space, they have a lot of capital, and they're able to hold it, so.
I mean, this will be a little bit more related to miniature gaming and I guess what most of the people who listen to this podcast do. But you know, for a long time, I didn't carry Games Workshop because there was already a store who had in my local town who had a active Games Workshop community, and so you know, trying to steal away from them seemed difficult. But really, the biggest issue was that they had their pretty strict rule that you could not sell their stuff online. And there were some places like the War Store, I believe, that had some workarounds where basically you would call a phone bank and or do mail order and could get stuff done that way. But they had regulations where you couldn't have a shopping cart and you couldn't use like their pictures and stuff like that. And then eventually they changed their policy and I started carrying their product. And since then, you know, it's become very, very, very clear to me that within the miniatures gaming industry, there is Games Workshop, who is basically the behemoth of the miniature industry. And then there's everyone else that is, you know, the minor league, that they're doing some cute stuff. And some of them do a really good job with the games that they make and the miniatures that they put out and stuff like that. But I guess I didn't like fully comprehend this until I started retailing it. But so the amount of checks? Well,
writing and cashing the checks.
Yeah, writing and I mean the amount of investment that I've had to capital I've had to tie up in buying product for Games Workshop has been not necessarily an easy problem to tackle, but it kind of blows my mind how like Games Workshop does two things. They make miniatures and they chew bubble gum and they're all out of bubble gum, and every week like clockwork they have a bunch of new releases out, and their production cycle is it blows my mind. So
yeah, and they sell. It's
and it sells. Yeah, yeah, yep.
It's so I had been mentioning I've been playing 40K, and I guess to kind of wrap this back to kind of a miniature gaming base here. One of them, obviously, I love Crisis Protocol. Let me start with that. Atomic Mass Games has created a fantastic game, and yes, I love Crisis Protocol. One of the things I've been hankering for in Crisis Protocol is a competitive scene, and there's two edges to this sword. I don't know if that's a real analogy, but we're gonna go with it. One is the local community in Colorado is still very young. I've done a lot of demos. I've gone to a lot of stores, you know, promoted the product. We've had great buy-in from our local game stores. They've been really supportive of the game. It's stocked a lot of places. We've sold a ton of starter boxes. But on play nights, I'm struggling to get more than 10 people. And there's no competitive play packet. There's no official competitive play packet out for the game yet. And as you know, right, we're both kind of obsessive. I want to go see how good I am. I want to understand the format, which will really help me optimize my list, my roster, excuse me. So I was kind of missing that. And the second thing is, I said at the beginning of the pod, I'm an introvert. Demoing is exhausting to me. And always having to be on and running demo games and things like that. I was looking for a game that where I didn't have to be that person, right? And, you know, I filled a similar role when I was grinding for War Machine. In order for me to play 4 to 5 games of War Machine a week, I had to make sure there's a really healthy War Machine community. So again, right, running events for that, doing demos for that, working with the game stores. So I was looking for a game where I could just be a dude, just a guy, a person. Sorry, I identify with male pronouns. I don't mean to assume I'm not offended. So 40K has tons of people. I drop into the casual Friday night at one of my game stores, and there's 23 people playing 40K. They have tournaments that sell out, like, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks. There's 15,000 people in the ITC format, which is like a league for them. It is incredible how many people they have. If you want like just like a made community, you can go there. And we talked about this, Jay. When I was trying to find another game, I was looking at Guild Ball, which, you know, I played for a little while. Same kind of issue, kind of a struggling community. You know, we've got 6 to 8 people that really like it, but only 4 to 6 of them can show up for an event at any given time. I was looking at Judgment, which is a game that I know you love, that sells in discount games. I like the rules. I like the models behind it. But I didn't want to do that community building thing again for me. So does 40K have some things that I hate? Absolutely. But 40K, I've enjoyed playing it. I've enjoyed painting them. And there's, it's hard to quantify the value of just like a pre-made community where you can just step in. There's tons of tournaments. There's tons of different ways to play the game. And there's so many people playing it. And I think that's one of the issues that you have breaking into the miniature scene. As great of a game as Judgment is, they still have to break into the scene, right? You have to know, if I go to Adepticon, I'm going to be able to play a bunch of games, which you would have if Adepticon was there. But, you know, for other smaller conventions, even your local game night, you know, get in that habit where you're just playing the same three or four people. And, you know, you end up kind of sliding back to one of those bigger games, whether it's 40K or on a much lower scale, right? Maybe even War Machine.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
But yeah, like you said, obviously there's some hiccups to stocking War Machine. We don't need to go into that too much. But yeah, for smaller stores especially, you end up having to tie up a lot of capital into product. And while you might move that product, you might end up with some things that sit on the shelf for some time. So
yeah.
I did want to take a little bit before the bonus episode and talk about COVID-19 and how it's impacting Gameopolis and Discount Games Incorporated. Obviously, Idaho and Colorado both have shelter in place orders. So we're not supposed to leave the house except for mandatory things. What's mandatory varies kind of state to state, but game stores are not mandatory in any place I have seen. So how is that impacting you, Jay? I'm told they close for reasons that may or may not be COVID-19 related. Whenever I see something like that, I remember the old saying, as there's no such thing as bad publicity. And I'm like, I think there's bad publicity out there. But how is, obviously, Gameopolis, I think, is closed. How is Discount Games doing? Are you staying open? How are you keeping the lights on with that?
So it's been an interesting journey. You know, I've been in business now for, I think I started at 2003, and, you know, starting off, I was doing this alone and eventually hired more and more staff. And as I hired more staff, you know, all that time, I've been playing unemployment insurance. And this is the first time that I've ever had to use the unemployment insurance. And so that's kind of it wasn't a great feeling. It wasn't something that I liked, obviously. Although I am very grateful that, that I guess those social support is there, or those, that safety net. And so, you know, we had the order come in place from the governor of Idaho, and we'd been, you and I had been talking about this quite a bit because, we chat a lot, and also it's obviously a topic of interest. And I was taken kind of by surprise by the order when Idaho did it, because so far Idaho had been dragging their feet on everything. They didn't do a statewide closure of the schools until just a few days before actually the stay-at-home order. And the governor was saying, you know, like, we're not going to do a statewide thing because we think that that's too much of a blanket policy for how big our state is. And then all of a sudden this order came in place, and he said that the governor said that it was effective immediately. And, you know, he gave a speech and gave a few rules, but they didn't post any written rules for several hours. And so, you know, my employees are kind of like, so what do we do? And I said, well, let's go ahead and close things up. And I sent them home. I told them that they should apply for unemployment insurance right away. And they did. And, you know, I understand that it's a kind of a scary time for everyone. And it is for me too. We have a fair bit of revenue that's through the website, but one of the things that we've worked hard on as well is trying to grow the revenue streams through the game store. And so having those shut off is something that's difficult. One of the things that with having the stay at home order, I can't have anyone come in to work at Gameopolis to ship out orders, besides myself and my husband, Brian. Brian, you know, since we're in the same household, if one of us are getting sick, honestly, it's just a lost cause that the other one's going to as well, most likely. And Brian has been working at Discount Games Inc. for a long time, but not in the things that are like, you know, pulling orders for me or things like that. He's doing more stuff like making sure all the pre-sale items, we know which ones to go out, or creating new listings or stuff like that. And so, you know, I've been, this morning we had, we prepped up the orders for Games Workshop, their new big wave of releases. And, you know, it's a lot of work to get done. It's more than two people really can get done, probably, period, or easily, but we're giving it a go. And, you know, I got up at 5:45 because I wanted to make sure that the Games Workshop stuff got out. And I wanted to, a part of the reason why with that is because one of the things I had heard was that Games Workshop could potentially change the release date on the product. And so I basically wanted to be in a situation where I had things packaged up, shipped up on Friday morning. And if it's at some point on Friday, they come out and say, hey, the release date has changed, then I'll be like, hey, you guys need to tell me that a little bit sooner because all this stuff is packaged up and gone. And, you know, I didn't want the people who pre-ordered from me, of whom you were one, which I appreciate. Thank you. Yeah. And it was a product that a lot of people were pretty excited for. And, you know, I didn't want my customers to potentially end up having to wait weeks, for a new release date. And so, then once that was done, it was working on the normal shipping. And then, FedEx brought their stuff, USPS brought the stuff, but UPS never did. And that had the pre-sales for the Marvel Crisis Protocol mats, amongst other things. And so I had it tonight. I went to the UPS hub and, had to pick up the 15 packages that were there at the UPS hub. And they called the driver and he's like, oh, well, I saw the sign on the door. It says closed. And so I just drove on by and, you know, I said to the manager, it's like, yeah, we were open. FedEx and USPS did it just fine. And, but I got those. And so, you know, now this weekend, I need to do receiving on a bunch of different product and need to prep the pre-sales for the game mats. And then in the morning, on Monday morning, there's going to be, you know, all the stuff that's sold over the weekend. And, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining about having all this to do because I'm grateful that people are placing the orders with me because, as I said, you know, this is a scary time and I appreciate people supporting me. And I also, this is this may come off as sounding a little bit cheesy or whatever, but, you know, for a long time, I've believed that what I do is a lot more than just sell something to people. It's not just X random widget. I could, you know, I believe I could likely find some other industry where I could probably make better margins or make a higher income or whatever. But part of the reason why I do this is because, you know, when we ship out a package to someone or when someone comes into Gameopolis and buys something, I believe that it is adding fun or joy to their life. And I'm doing something positive for them and I'm helping out humanity. And, you know, it probably sounds a little bit cheesy that someone saying that, you know, selling games is being a positive force on humanity, but it's something that I've believed. And so, you know, right now there's a lot of people who are like, before the stay at home order came in place, and I wasn't just slammed all the time busy, it did like start kind of, I was already practicing voluntarily social distancing, and it was kind of starting to get to me. And there's, you know, there's issues with anxiety and there's issues with depression and there's all these things going on. And, you know, if I want to, if someone trusts me enough to place an order on my site, I want to get that order out to them. And, you know, it's my hope that they will, when they get that package and they're able to play that game with their family, or they're able to assemble that model and paint it, or, you know, I've been selling a lot of paint this last little bit, which is great. I mean, I think it's awesome that people are, you know, stocking up on their hobby supplies so that they can do something that they love to stay sane. And so, you know, it has been a lot of work, and it's been mentally and physically demanding, but I'm just grateful for everyone who's supported the business.
No, absolutely. And just to recap, so Discount Games Incorporated is going to continue to stay up and continue to take orders for the foreseeable future. Okay, awesome.
Yeah, that's correct.
I wanted to mention real quick here, and you know, Jay, I always try to support you. Obviously, you're my friend, and you provide a good, great value to the community. Is if there is a local business, and a lot of people don't think of Discount Games Incorporated as a local business, but it is it's a store in Idaho. It's a local business. If there's one of these smaller businesses that you want to see after this pandemic, I highly recommend you support them if you're in a place financially to be able to. A lot of businesses aren't able to generate revenue, or revenue's down. I'm sure you've experienced
that.
So, obviously, take care of your family first. And then after that, though, like if there's somewhere that it is important to you, whether that's a game store or a restaurant or anything, again, I think it's important to keep that in mind. And again, if you have the means, try to keep these businesses you've come to love for whatever reason open. I've one of those people that's been ordering a lot of paint. I foolishly have told myself I will come out of this with a fully painted 40K army. And I don't know if I will, but again, it's been a nice way to kind of calm down at the end of the night. It's been a great way for me to kind of center myself after a very like anxious day, right? I want to hear news and then I get on social media and then it's just like a dumpster fire. So just kind of relaxing at the end of the day and painting for me has been very calming.
Yeah. And a few, since this is a War Machine centric podcast, a few things of news related to that. So earlier this week on Tuesday, is when the governor of Washington said that they were going to have their shelter in place order going to, or issued, and then it was going to go into effect in 24 hours. And so I placed a big restock order on Wednesday, and that's some of the things that arrived today from UPS. And so I tried to order some of the most popular things, looking at sales trends, etc., to try to stay in stock with some of these things for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks potentially, so that people can, if they end up deciding they want to buy some of the hotness, I'll have it available for at least a little while. And so check those out at my site. I should have that available for you to get. The other thing that I wanted to touch on real quick was that today was supposed to be the release day for basically all of the March pre-sales with Privateer Press. And I get my new releases from Privateer Press from ACD, one of my distributors, and the new releases shipped to California. California did their shelter in place order. And so then the order shipping to Madison, Wisconsin, and then it's supposed to arrive on Monday. And basically the long and short of it is we're hoping to have all those new releases shipped out to you guys by around April 9th. And so, you know, I'm sorry for the delays. We're going to try to get it to you as quickly as we can. And I know there's a lot of exciting stuff. Stuff like Asphyxius 4 and the new Convergence Jacks and Ashland 2. And we want to get your guys' toys out to you guys as quick as we can. Unfortunately, there's some of the delays that we can't really avoid, unfortunately.
Yeah, and just to make sure I understand what's happening, a lot of future, your ability to order product in the future is in question, right? But we have some things in flight, and those things are coming. They're just going to be delayed, and you'll get them processed as quick as you can, right?
Yeah, there is. It looks like the way that Washington's, when I placed my big restock order, things were kind of up in the air, and I decided that I needed to, you know, get a restock in for the key things and not leave things to chance. But it's also looking like the way that the Washington order operates is that Privateer Press is going to have a little bit of a skeleton crew at their warehouse. And so if there is something that I end up getting out on, I'll probably be able to get like a little bit slower restock on it. But that's kind of how things are looking going forward.
I know we're probably getting a little close to time before we kind of go into the bonus episodes. There's a few other things I want to hit on real quick, Jay, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
And that's the ability to play some tabletop games that we love online. Now, compared to tabletop gaming, all of these methods suck. But we can't actually game on the tabletop, so they become kind of more viable alternatives. And I'm really talking about Vassal and Tabletop Simulator. War Machine Vassal has been really popular. There's all sorts of, you can check out the Reddit. There's a Discord server for it. But if you are kind of hankering for a game, it's a great way to get out there and play with some War Machine stuff, use the new releases that haven't come out yet, get some experience on it. And then Marvel Crisis Protocol, Jay, I know you and I both are playing that. The module for that for Tabletop Simulator just came out. And there's 40K and Guild Ball and all those things on these different things. So check out Vassal, check out Tabletop Simulator if you haven't heard of them. If you just Google how to play, like, game I want to play, Vassal, game I want to play, Tabletop Simulator. There's all kinds of videos explaining it. I'll warn you that it's finicky, that it's not quite the same, the games are going to take a lot longer than you anticipate. But it is a way to get kind of some of the gaming out, to get some of the social aspect on it. You know, you can jump on a Discord, Jay and I could play, we could talk, we could chat as we go through it, and we could play a game. So I just want to encourage people, you know, for your own mental health, if you're really kind of hankering for a game, definitely check out those options, Vassal and Tabletop Simulator.
Awesome. Were there any other topics you were wanting to go over in this first episode?
I think we're good. It was kind of rambly, but I think we covered a lot of important things. And then in the bonus episode, we're going to be going over a lot of user questions mainly. We might talk about COVID a little more, but I think it'd be good to get away from that a little bit. That can be kind of a little oppressive, like just kind of a wet blanket over the top of things. But we have a lot of user questions from the Discord group. I guess, actually, before we go to the bonus episode, do you want to talk about Chain Attack for a minute?
Yeah, so if we had a announcement in the most recent Chain Attack that where we announced that after 9 years of doing a podcast where that was focused on War Machine, the majority of those years, I think 7, where we did 2 episodes a week between the main episode and the dojo. We're going to continue doing a podcast, but we're going to change the format, and the new format, the name of the podcast will be Chain Attack Grading Geekery. And so we will have 1 to 2 topics in a roughly 45-minute episode, and it'll be something related to geekery, and then at the end of the segment we're going to grade what we thought of that that geeky thing. So, you know, it's in some ways it feels like and kind of is the end of an era. We've been doing a War Machine podcast for a really long time. But it's something that we're excited for this new direction. And I think that it's, going to be good for us. And I think it's going to be good, hopefully for the podcast. So,
and, you can follow all that, I believe, at chain-attack.com, the same website that you used previously, and on Facebook, again, Chain Attack on Facebook. And not naming any names, but the hosts we love and the hosts we love to hate, they're all staying. It's the same group.
Yeah, it is the same group.
Awesome. So I look forward to hearing a couple episodes. If you ever need a pinch hitter, let me know. Happy to jump on. But yeah, I did want to mention that. I feel like I could congratulate you. That's a huge... Chain Attack is such like a staple of the meta. It'll be interesting as it kind of fades to black. I'm excited to hear kind of the last couple episodes you guys end up putting out for it. So congratulations. It's been a heck of a run, and I'm excited to see what you guys do in the future.
Yeah, and thank you for everyone who's listened and supported us. You guys have been amazing. So I guess we can go ahead and wrap up this first episode here. The next one, we will have more Patreon questions that we'll be going over, and I'm sure we'll have other topics as well. So thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you everyone who has supported us on Patreon, and thank you everyone who's supporting Muse on Minis and Discount Games Inc. We definitely appreciate it. And Sung-Soo, thank you for helping out with this podcast.
Anytime. Thanks so much for having me on.